Blog Talk Radio.
Time with Pastor Steph.
Good morning, good morning. Rise and shine. You're on with the due time with Pastor Steph. How are you this morning? That's what I like to hear. That's what I like to hear. For this is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. So, where were you all week? Well, we had an abridged work week over here on his due time with Pastor Steph. So we started with Wow Wednesday, and we got to talking with our girlfriend Vivian, and she talked about the fact that New York City must pay back $18.8 million. Dollars, oh, quite a bit of money. They have to pay that money back to the children who were in foster care, and they never received money, or their parents never received money, or the caretakers never received money. Somebody didn't get the money, to the tune of $18.8 million. And they got to give that money back. Yes. Now, they've been holding this money all this time, and now they want to hold it until the children who are eligible to receive it get to, you know, the age where they're no longer in the foster system. Now, here's the problem. You've been holding it all along, and you've been playing the shell game. Everybody knows what the shell game is, right? Yeah. Well, that's where you put the little ball underneath the shell, and you keep moving it around, and you keep moving it around, and everywhere you guess, it's not there. Yeah, well, they've been doing this all along. So if you haven't been trusted to hold the money and be able to keep up and do what you're supposed to do with it up to now, I surely don't suggest that you hold the money until these children come out of foster care. Listen, give it up. Give up the money right now. Get it out of your hands. Get that $18.8 million out of your hands before someone else is complaining that they did not get money that they would do that. Yeah, haven't you played this game long enough? Yeah, cut it out. Cut it out and cut it out again. Yeah, let's take our time. Let's allocate these funds appropriately, and let's get it out the care of New York City. Well, Vivian also talked about the drive-through weddings. Yeah, where Massachusetts couples will be allowed to get married in 15 minutes just by going on through. And, I mean, think about it. They get to pay, save on all the money that they would have spent had they gone the old-fashioned way and gotten a wedding cake and, you know, rented a hall and done all of that stuff that people normally do in order to get married. Yeah. Well, for $250, they can have their paperwork done and everything added $50, and you can get a convertible car to go along with it. Yeah. Yeah, that might seem interesting for some people. Other people are, you know, they're not too keen on it. But, you know, for those who really are in love and want to get this done, yeah, they can get it done real quick, fast, and in a hurry. And that's how we spent our Wednesday. Well, Therapeutic Thursday. Oh, my goodness. We had Mrs. Athena Dan Allen come through with her nutrition and wellness segment. And her first segment topic was understanding food, and man, I gotta tell you, she was thorough. She answered questions before you could really get them even in your head. She gave us a breakdown. If you didn't understand food before, you really should have no problem understanding food as of now. Yeah. I mean, she was really thorough. She talked about nutrients. She talked about amino acids. You know, I asked her to describe a good breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and she did just that. She even gave us a little breakdown on some other stuff as to how to take care of your vegetables, how to clean them, and, you know, things like that. And she offered to, you know, get a brochure, a nutrition brochure via email. So if you go on Athena Dent, that's A-T-H-E-N-A-D-E-N-T, on Facebook, you'll find her. And she's offering, you know, different classes and stuff like that. And she's an author of 6 books. So I think I might want to have her on to talk about one of her books. Because she was really good. Very, very good. And informative. Well, today is Freestyle Friday, and we get to do whatever it is we want to do. Yeah. Well, Talk to the Men is what we do. And I don't know what they're going to have to say today. I really don't have any idea what they're going to bring to the table today. You know, you never can tell what it is that, you know, you're going to bring to the table when you're a man here on his due time with Pastor Steph. And I'm looking forward to the conversation today. Before I go anywhere, did you check out my 2 cents last night? Oh, it was good. Another good segment, everybody. Yeah. We talked about and we reviewed The Cleaning Lady. Yeah, it's a Fox show, but it's actually getting a replay. It's on demand on Hulu, which is only carrying their third season, so if you can't go there if you haven't started it. But if you have HBO Max, you can actually pick it up from season one, episode one. And, you know, it got click it, click it, click it, yes. And our viewers said click it. So it got a unanimous click it. So you want to go check it out. Then we reviewed Shirley. And it was a Netflix movie about Shirley Chisholm. And a unanimous click it, click it, click it, click it, click it, click it, click it from us and the audience. Yes, our listeners, our viewers say click it as well. It stars Regina King, Terrence Howard, Lance Reddick. It had a nice cast of characters. It was good. It was good. And again, it got a unanimous click it. Next week, God spares, we are continuing The Cleaning Lady, which we should finish. And we are reviewing One Love, the biopic movie about Bob Marley. And if you have Paramount or MGM Plus, you can actually view it if you want to. You can rent it for $9.99 on Prime if you want to keep up with us and view it and be able to talk about it. All right? So I just wanted to kind of fill you in on it. It was good. It was good. And Brother Ainsley was not loud with his popcorn yesterday. So we got to hear him clearly. So, you know, check us out next week, Thursday, guys, at 7:30. And that's YouTube Live, A Closer Walk Christian Talk Show, as well as Facebook Live, Coach for Christian Life. We have a ball. We have a ball. All right? So let's get ready to rumble, as they say. Let's get that healthy breakfast. Now, remember, we got some clues as to what a healthy breakfast can look like. We can go and tell somebody that it's due time with Pastor Steph is on. And whatever you do, don't go anywhere, because we will be right back.
Susan, I should have had those reports on my desk yesterday.
I have to pay the bills. The mortgage is late.
Honey, where's the remote? Is dinner ready yet? I'm starving.
Mommy.
What? What do you want?
Are you becoming a mess because of stress? Visit stressfreemama.com. We can help.
Good morning, and good morning again. Welcome back to It's Due Time with Pastor Steph. And it is Freestyle Friday. Woo! We did it, y'all. We got through the week by the grace of God. Only by the grace of God. This has been one busy week for Pastor Steph. I don't know about you, but the week has flown by, and it's, oh my goodness, it's just been a busy, challenging week, and it has helped the week go by really quickly. And I don't know. I'm looking forward to the rest of this weekend just going on by. You know, so we can, I want to sleep on Sunday. I want to get a nice little sleepy sleep. But before I can do that, I got to get through today with you all. So let's get to chatting. All right, so you know on Fridays I like to bring you some, you know, celebrity news. I like to talk about the celebs. And I came across a couple of articles this week that were pretty interesting and a little different. So I came across an article that talked about the members of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame with gospel roots. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. I could only think of like a couple of people. So I was like, you know, I really want to see who they have listed. So let's see who came up on our radar. Ray Charles. Yeah. Well, I don't know how many of you know that Ray Charles used to have a group, Ray Charles and the Voices of Jubilation. Yeah. Well, he was inducted in 1986. You know, Ray Charles was around for a long time. And he, they used to call him the genius. Yeah. They say that his music was a fusion of gospel, jazz, and blues. And he brought the fervor of gospel music into everything he touched. That's what they say. That's what they say. Who else is on this list? Sam Cooke. And they're noting A Change Is Gonna Come. You remember that song? Everybody knows that song. Well, that was a Sam Cooke song. He was inducted in 1986. They say before he crossed over into pop and R&B, he was best known as a gospel singer. So, you know, all of that gospel flavor that he started with got brought into, you know, the rest of his music. Who else are they naming? Aretha Franklin. Yeah, they got RiRi on this list, who was inducted in 1987. And then noting her song, Amazing Grace, that she sang and recorded. You know, we know she didn't write it. But, you know, we all know that Aretha Franklin, who was crowned the Queen of Soul, had her roots in gospel music from her dad's church. Yes, remember that? Yeah, so, you know, she always had that gospel sound in her voice. So she was put into the Hall of Fame, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, in 1987. Well, they're talking about the Soul Stirrers, and they were inducted in 1989, and they recorded I'm a Soldier in the Army of the Lord. I'm sure that's the one. They, Sam Cooke, actually performed with this Soul Stirrers group. Yeah. So, remember they said before he broke into pop and rock and roll that, he actually was a gospel singer. So the Soul Stirrers is where he got his start. All righty. Al Green. Yeah, you know, everything is gonna be all right. He's coming back like he said he would. Remember that? Yeah. Well, the Love and Happiness Man, yeah, he started, you know, probably in his little younger days, he probably did the, I know Pastor KL is probably talking about me now. He did the you know, gospel thing, probably when he was younger. And back in 1995, he was inducted into the Hall of Fame. And he then, you know, from his Everything Gonna Be All Right, you know, before then he was doing the Love and Happiness thing and the other thing. Remember he used to undress and wear the wool hat? I never understood that. But Al Green has ever since then been doing gospel. He never went back. So, you know, he's got that flavor now. Mahalia Jackson, who was inducted in the Hall of Fame in 1997. Well, Mahalia, we know, was hailed the Queen of Gospel, and she definitely went down in the Hall of Fame for her gospel music and gospel singing. Who else is on this list? The Staple Singers. We all know the Staple Singers. They were singing, you know, a little R&B back in the day. Well, they were inducted in 1999 into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And Sit Down Servant is one of the songs that they are, you know, noting. And they say they transcended quite a few different genres of music. Yeah. Who else is on this list? They have Sister Rosetta Tharpe, who was inducted back in 2018. And Up Above My Head is what they're noting. Now, she was nicknamed the godmother of rock and roll. I mean, come on. They got all these crowns going on. But that song I am familiar with, but I haven't heard much else from Sister Rosetta. All right? So, you know, they always say that all of these artists got their start in gospel music. And gospel music was actually the launching pad for quite a few different genres of music. All righty. What else did I come up with in our celebrity news this morning? Oh, okay. So we've got some black celebrity brands that are really taking off, they claim. Now, some of these you may have heard, and some of these you may not even know about. So let's see who comes up on this radar as having a brand. All right. Well, we all know the Fenty Beauty brand by Rihanna. Yes, yes, yes. She has a cosmetics and skincare company called Fenty Beauty. She also has this fashion line. I think she does like lingerie fashion line, and that's for men and women. Yeah, I think it's both. So she's actually on the radar for her different skincare items. Fenty Beauty is what she calls it, as they say. Who else is coming up under skincare? Alicia Keys. Now, I don't know if you know, or how many of you know, but back in 2016, she decided to go makeup free. And she said that she really began to depend on makeup. And this was her launching pad to talk about her struggle with acne and other skin conditions. So she started a skincare brand called Keys Soul Care, and it encourages you to embrace your natural beauty, and seems to be doing pretty well, they say. All right. Who else? Another skincare OAM Skincare by Sierra. We all know the artist, Sierra. Well, she's been embracing her natural beauty as well. So she's got some skincare goodies out there. OAM Skincare is a clinical collaboration with some skincare experts, some scientists, dermatologists, and some other alrighty, so she's doing the skincare thing as well. Now, they've got this Naomi Osaka, and she looks familiar, but I really don't know her. But she also has skincare, and oh, she's a tennis player. She's a tennis player girl. That's why she looks familiar. All right, so she's launched her own sun care brand, especially for black and brown skin. And who else to do this? You know, that was pretty smart. You know, everybody has heard of this, you know, this this skin disease that you can get from being in the sun. And somebody who plays tennis would definitely understand that concern. So she's got her little brand out here. Now we've got who else out here? Fragrances. So you've got Forever by Aina. I don't know how to pronounce her name, but Forever is spelled F-O-R-E-V-R. And she is really pushing her fragrance brand, and she's got quite a few unique scents as they are listing here. And they say it's pretty good. It's making a lasting impression. We have, what's that, Saint Noir? Beyonce has her fragrance. And we know Beyonce's been out there a minute with her little brand. She started with her jeans and, you know, some other stuff that she did in the clothing line. So now she's got some fragrances that she's got out there. And we'll see what that, you know, what that does in this world. Hair care. Who has embraced hair care? Well, Tracy Ellis Ross. Pattern Beauty is what she has put out there. And she's, you know, been talking about her little crown for quite some time. And she's talked about how her hair has grown quite a bit with her hair care products. So you might want to check it out. I want to check it out. Flawless, and that's a Gabrielle Union product. And she's also gone into the hair care industry. So she's got a collection that includes 12 products with hydrating and protein-rich ingredients for afro-textured hair. Issa Rae, Sienna Naturals is her little hair care line. And they say for years, you know, she's been donning her hairstyles. I've seen her with quite a few different hairstyles. And one of her items, she has a full wash day routine. So you might want to try her out, you know. She's been using her own products. TPH by Taraji P. Henson. Oh, that's, you know, real natural. TPH. She's another one who's going for hair care products. And, you know, scalp and all kinds of things, serums for your hair. Okay. Oh, well, Beyonce's back. What is that, Secret? C-E-C-R-E-D. And she's got her hair care collection for black women and their crowning glory. Yeah. So, you know, if you want to support these ladies of color who have their own natural care ingredients, you see what helps to beautify them, then, you know, go ahead out there and do your thing. I'm sure they'd appreciate it. So, what are we talking about today? So, I got to tell you, I have some different news today. Yeah, it's not all kill 'em up or stuff, but some news nonetheless. But it was just interesting. All the stuff that I came across yesterday was a little different than what we normally get. So, you know, I wanted to give this stuff, put this out there for the men and see what they, you know, had to say about these things. Well, I came across this last night, and we are definitely going to tackle this one in my two cents. So get ready. I didn't realize that the Preachers of L.A. has returned. Yeah, they actually started the other day, the 23rd of April. Yeah. So for those of you who remember back in 2013, 14, and 15, we had the Preachers of L.A. on TV, and that was Dietrich Haddon and his wife, Wayne Chaney and his wife, Ron Gibson and his wife, and they were quite a list of characters. And Noel Jones was on there, and he had that Loretta Love story going on, and she wanted to get married so desperately. Remember that? She tried to act like she wasn't desperate, but she was desperate. She was desperate. And, you know, a lot of people felt like, you know, they represented, you know, it was a reality show, and they felt that, you know, why the Preachers of L.A. had to look like that. Listen, they are who they are. If I can remember correctly, one of those guys used to be a gangbanger. Yeah, remember that? Come on, just go back in the recesses of your mind. Well, they are back, and they started April 23rd, like I said. And guess what they started back with? Noel Jones and Loretta. Yeah. So we got to check that out. We got to check that out here on his due time. Yeah, we're going to keep up with this one because I want to know, this is 10 years now, they've come back, and have they done anything different? Now, again, like I said, back then, you know, they had this story of Noel Jones and his love interest, Loretta, and you know, he was trying to act like he was not too interested, and I don't think he really was, to be honest with you, you know, or either maybe he was just playing it for the sake of the show. But I want to see what they're doing now. I want to see if they've come back 10 years later and, you know, if they're not doing what they were doing back then. Now, I don't know who the cast is this time. I don't know who's returning. I do know the two of them are returning, and let's see what they're doing. Let's see what they're doing. What else was on my list yesterday? Let's see. Okay, so they had this story. Now, this is very common. We've heard of this quite a bit, but we haven't heard much on this end of it, you know, of men who have been you know, put in jail for years, decades sometimes, falsely, you know, accused and jailed. Now they have this crooked prosecutor from Kansas. She's on the other side of the fence. And she has now turned over her law license following a probe from the Department of Justice that revealed that she intentionally sent a black man to prison for no reason. So since 1989, over 1,200 black people have been exonerated of crimes that they were wrongfully convicted of. And when they did the research, they found there was a lot of prosecutorial misconduct. But this one here, they say, was just really, really blatant. They say that this Lamont McIntyre, a black guy who was just 17 years old when he was framed for a 1994 double murder by this now retired some county assistant, Tara Moorhead. And she had, they say, partnered up with some corrupt Kansas City detective, Roger Golubsky. Now, they say she made nearly a career. That was her career slam dunk by putting this McIntyre in prison until they found out, until he was released in 2017, and then they found out that she had a fling with the trial judge and coerced the star witness into making a false testimony against Mr. McIntyre, and that's how he was found guilty. Yeah. So after all of this came out, when he was released in 2017, she chose to turn over her law license. Now, they're not satisfied with that. And no, not when you intentionally did this. What, turning over your law license? So now we get to dictate what happens to us when we commit crimes? No, this person just went to jail for all those years for commit, you know, for a crime he didn't commit. So now all you do is turn over your license and now you can go about your business because you retired. No, they are going after homegirl, and they are looking to really hold her feet to the fire. So I'm hoping that, you know, after they found out that this is some fraud, deceit, they say misrepresentation, dishonesty. Yeah, yeah. Smash her and smash her good. They're looking to disbar her. But she's they say she's retired. Well, I guess they say she's retired because she handed over a law license. But put her in jail. Put her in jail. She literally ruined someone's life. She needs to go to jail. And I hope whatever activist comes out of the woodwork to ensure that she goes down, because that is horrific, horrific. You're sleeping with the judge. Now, I could probably say this has happened millions of times. Yeah, a whole lot of this is going on. Nobody knows until later. Wow. Talk about some investigation that's going on. You've got, Eddie Murphy and Kiki Palmer's The Pickup being investigated. Yeah. Well, these two are not being investigated more than this accident that took place that injured several of their crew members. So they were on the set. these two were missing that today, that particular day. They were not on the set for this particular scene that they were filming. I'm sorry, the pickup, and it was a video, the video portion of the car crash. And come to find out that they believe something went wrong, you know, went wrong, if you know what I'm talking about. So it was supposed to be, let me see if I can get to the part where they really talk about this here. Okay, so they have a scene where the car is supposed to run into like some truck or something. Yeah. And something went wrong. Some armored truck swerves into an SUV is supposed to supposedly flip over. Well, something went wrong on the set and several of them were injured. And they're really doing some probing now to find out what exactly went wrong. Now, if you remember, we talked quite a bit last year about Alec Baldwin and this whole shooting incident where someone was killed. Well, thankfully, no one was killed in this particular, you know, occurrence. But they're not taking this lightly. They're not taking this lightly at all. And they're definitely opening up one serious investigation. And what they were saying also is this is one of the reasons why there's this huge discussion about stunt doubles. And, you know, I don't know if you know, but over the past, I would say maybe 20 years, these actors, especially men, have opted to do their own, scenes. They want the money. They want the money. They don't want the stunt doubles to do these particular scenes. And, you know, these scenes have been getting more and more, risky. So they have this huge concern that, you know, you all are not kind of quote-unquote trained to do this. So, you know, they've been saying, well, train us. You know, we'll take the money. And that has made them more marketable. Well, I don't know, but somebody is going to have to answer for this one. And like I said, based on all of that hoopla that went on last year, who shot John and who had their hand on the gun last, and this one should have known that the gun had real bullets in it. Yeah, they're not playing, and they figure they're gonna get ahead of this, opposed to, you know, somebody coming back and suing, because crew members were injured. We ain't talking about the people on the set necessarily, the actors. We talk about crew members, and she was a crew member who got killed. So they're getting in front of this one. They're getting ahead of this problem right here. Before anybody can start raising a flag, they're getting on top of this. I got a couple more minutes before I get my guys on, and they're all on today. Wow, so we can talk about this stuff. Let's see what else we're talking about really quickly. Well, you know we got to throw in one of these. What is going on with these mamas story this morning? So you've got this little girl, 6 years old, oh my goodness gracious, who was murdered at the hands of her own mother, beaten to death, and her mother, 23 years old. And I want to talk to the guys today about these Gen Zs who are having these children, and they're responsible for their deaths. This has been a real surge in this particular area. So they're saying back in May of 23, little Jalea Eason was inside of her apartment with her mother overnight, and they say that several calls had come in about something going on in one of the apartments. And the mother called the cops and told them that she found the little girl cold and not breathing inside of a closet. And when they got there, the story that she had told, they found was wrong, that there was, she claimed she had done CPR on the little girl. But what they found was a whole lot of bruising and trauma on her wrists and torso. And they say she died of asphyxia and blunt force injuries. Now, it was an upstairs neighbor who had told them that he heard the six-year-old girl screaming during the early morning when her mother was beating her, and she was yelling, "Stop, stop, stop." And he said you could hear the thumps. And, you know, he was the one who called the cops. But I can't even imagine hearing this. And, oh, Lord, here's the saddest part about this story. They say that she had been previously arrested and charged with the fact that she had hurt two other children, 8 years old and 3 years old. And they said those two children had cuts, scars, rashes, and all kinds of bruises all over their body. They say that the 8-year-old had countless small lacerations in various stages of healing on his back, scalp, arms, and legs. The boy allegedly had cut on his forehead and deep, partially healed gash on his scalp. The little girl had long discolored scars, widespread discolored rash to her inner thighs and buttocks. Oh, Lord have mercy. They say that the home was infested with insects. How is she charged and she still managed to keep this baby who she kills? And you know what? I don't think this is going to stop until the people who leave these children in the home are arrested and charged as well. This is horrific. And I'm so tired of hearing about this. And like I said, I want to talk about, you know, the fact that the last few weeks we've been doing, or almost this entire year, most of these parents have been Gen Zs. What is going on with these kids? Because that's what they are. They're kids. Let's talk to my brother Ainsley and see what's going on with this news. Good morning, Brother Ainsley.
Hey, good morning, Pastor Steph. Good morning, good morning.
That sounds like somebody just dragged you out the bed. Come on, I need you to be vibrant along with me, just listening to this noise here on this
I'm good.
All righty now. So the first story we're covering is this woman, this prosecutor, who intentionally lied to put this Mr. McIntyre in jail. And he was in jail from 1994-ish all the way to 2017. And it wasn't until he actually got out of jail that they found out that there was some misconduct. And she had been sleeping with the trial judge, and she had some corrupt Kansas City detective in her pocket. Oh, what kind of time should she get? Because clearly her turning over her law license is not going to be enough. What kind of time should she serve?
You know, honestly, I think life. Life. Life
okay.
without the benefit of parole or a 25-year minimum. I think this right here is the pinnacle. This is beyond misconduct. This is as worse as it can possibly get. You're talking about those who are supposed to uphold the law. Beyond the police officers and whatnot, you know, most times police officers, they, you know, they'll arrest somebody. But then the prosecutor come in, who wants to have to prosecute the case, at least adjudicate and be like, okay, listen, this ain't right. No, we cannot going to prosecute this for whatever reasons. You know, the police did something wrong. This is bogus, yada, yada, yada. But when you have a prosecutor who goes beyond that and it's a clear participant and trying to put somebody in jail there who knowingly knows they didn't do it, it's despicable. This is what the whole court system is for, is to determine and make sure if somebody should be going to jail or not in criminal court, you know. And so to have somebody who specifically goes, pursues for somebody who knowingly put somebody innocent in jail, it's the worst thing you can do. Because what's the sense then? This ain't justice. So what is society going to have without true justice? So they need to be, the prosecutors need to be upheld to the utmost standards. And they need to be prosecuted to the full extent. Not no law license, oh, I can't practice law. No, you need to go to jail because of the consequences. What not only for the person who they, they put in jail, but for society as well. And I'm going to presume there's a racial overtone to this as well, because that's where it tends to be oftentimes. But it's wrong. It's just totally wrong. So I think straight up, I think it may seem like overkill to say life, but maybe it has to be like that to prevent people from, or the further prosecutors from even thinking about doing that. And think about, okay, there are mistakes that happen, just human mistakes and stuff like that, but this ain't a mistake. This is beyond, it's beyond misconduct. I think life, 25 years, minimum.
All right. All righty. We're going to do this round like we do the ladies on Wednesday. So I'm going to hit up my brother Al. Thanks for joining us this morning, Brother Ainsley. Brother Al, good morning.
Right. Chop, chop of the morning. Chop, chop of the morning. Oh, yeah. Good morning to
all
you.
All right. Good morning, Brother Al. What say you about this woman who, you know, she turns over her law license and, you know, which kind of forces her into quote-unquote retirement, and they're now trying to see what else they're going to do with her, because right now that would be her justice for herself. What do you think the time should be that they give her, or should they give her jail? What should her punishment be for intentionally putting this man in jail?
Two words, Big Shirley. She need to go to jail. We need to go to jail and see Big Shirley. You know, I mean, that's just so sad that, you know, just like, that's just evil to sit there and say, okay, you know what? I'm going to get this guy. I'm going to make an example. And then you're going to go and do something like that. She need to go in jail. She need to serve the same time he did to see how it feel, lose everything. You know, and because sometimes when they do this wrongful death thing, wrongful jail, they'll let the person out, they give them like $1 million or something and call it a day. No. She need to go to jail. See how it feels for somebody to take away her life.
Okay.
Big
Shirley. Okay. Okay. Thanks for joining us this morning. Let's talk to our Pastor KL. Good morning, Pastor KL.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, Pastor Steph. How are you?
I am well, thank you. I am well. All right. We have this gentleman, Lamont McIntyre. He was 17 years old when he was framed for this 1994 double murder. And he spent time all the way to 2017, only to find out that he was mistakenly placed in jail intentionally. And what kind of time, or should she even go to jail? What should be her punishment for intentionally trashing this man's life?
Well, first, let me say, you know, Brother Ainsley would be sleeping all day. But if you have any conversation about law and order, he gonna wake up. I've known Ainsley for a long, long time. I mean, Ainsley is wide awake now, so just tell him the conversation right there. But I'm with them. I think life. You know what I mean? I think definitely. I don't even think minimum. Nothing. I just think minimum life. You know, it's gone are the days where you know all black folks look alike. You know what I mean? You just can't frame me on that kind of stuff. And you doing this purposely, so you didn't care about my life. I mean, let's look at it. It was a child. It wasn't someone who's been here for a while and might have had priors, and you know, we might have just made a mistake. You made no mistake. You did this on purpose to a child. You took away his life as a child. You didn't allow him to grow. You know, you didn't allow him to fix any mistakes he made. You put him in jail with some real folks who did some real stuff for no reason.
Okay. And I happen to agree with you, gentlemen. I think she needs to get life. I don't care if he only spent 5 years in jail. That was 5 years that he had no business being there. We don't know what he experienced. We don't know what kind of trauma he's been left with. And she would get life, and I'm with you, gentlemen, who say no minimum. You know, whether it sounds or seems harsh or not, nah, give it to her. Smash her and smash her well as the judge. I want to hear about what's going on with the judge, what did happen with this corrupt detective. They all need to go down for life, period. All right, gentlemen, next story. We have... this car chase accident. Now, you know what happened last year but we talked about it quite a bit on the set of, especially with you guys. I remember speaking with you gentlemen, minus Brother Ainsley, about this whole, back and forth with Alec Baldwin and who killed the woman with the gun and who was responsible for the gun. What do you think about them really probing into what happened on this set? Brother Al, we're starting with you.
Yeah, these people should be held accountable. You know, speaking of the Alec Baldwin, I see the, I think it was the lady who prosecuted the gun, they put her in prison. You know, if this is your profession, this is your profession, and you're getting paid all this money, it is your job to make sure everything is where it's supposed to be. You should have your eye on everything so nobody can come in there and tamper with things, and you should be held accountable. This is your profession. This is what you do. You know, if I'm on the set and I'm working with a prop gun, that gun staying in my pocket until it's time for that person to get it. That way I know ain't nobody touched it. But I think that you should be held accountable because this is your profession. And somebody's life got taken away because of your negligence. So off the prison you go, Big Bubba, Big Shirley. Choose one.
Okay. Pastor KL, you know, they say that the stunt was supposed to be an armored truck swerved into an SUV. Both of the cars go off the road, and they both violently flip over. And they say that it happened the way it was supposed to happen, but some people got injured. Now, if it happened the way it was supposed to happen and people got injured, what do you think should happen? Should they, you know, probe, or should they just say, you know what, it happens? It happens, it happens.
Well, my thing is this. First of all, if it happened the way it's supposed to happen and people still got injured, it wasn't planned very well.
Mm.
Because, I mean, then you're saying that they were supposed to get hurt. So you didn't plan this too well. So, one, you know, the planner who created this action, you know, they did a bad thing. So that person, you know, should be accused of something, because it wasn't planned out very well. If you say, I'm going to fill up the water, the pool, and if you die from here to here, the ratio says that you won't hit the bottom and kill yourself. But if I kill myself, then the ratio was wrong. And so whoever put this to play should be the one who gets punished.
Okay. Brother Ainsley, they say that someone reported that when the truck locked up and it hit another vehicle. So that part wasn't supposed to happen. And they say that the injuries ranged from bumps and bruises to broken bones. Two crew members ended up in the hospital, and one remained hospitalized as of the posting of this article. What do you think of the probing? Justified?
Yeah, I'm not totally familiar with this, or this whole story, but definitely you gotta, anytime somebody gets injured, you definitely gotta probe and investigate. Unless it's everybody is in the know, like, okay, there is potential for physical harm. If I'm not anticipating or in a situation where I can possibly anticipate it, I ain't supposed to be getting hurt. I ain't supposed to be getting no cuts, no scratches, no bones broke, nothing like that. So unless that happens, it definitely has to be investigated, probed, and whatnot. Because you know, somebody going to pay for that. You know, somebody going to pay for the medical bills, insurance, and stuff like that, because, you know, most insurance companies, they don't want to see that happen again. And who wants that stain on their record? Okay, maybe, all right, there was a miscalculation, if you will, but you got to make sure you get your act together, because there ain't going to be much more miscalculations on somebody else's film. But that person's going to be like, oh, no, you don't want to work with this person. Because they screw up. They allow people to get hurt. They might allow people to die on set. That's the last thing you want. So most definitely, it's got to be probed and figure out what happened, so it won't happen again. Most definitely.
Okay.
And Pastor Steph, to his point, that, you know, if you know that you don't want to do all that stuff, or you don't want to deal with the aftermath, have them sign a waiver. Listen, how
I'm
many
sure
times?
I'm sure they do.
Yeah, but I mean, okay, so when you smoke cigarettes, there's a waiver on there whether you sign or not. This can cause cancer. If you decide you still want to do this, you've signed the waiver. I'm not doing no stunt where I crash somebody else's car. I'm just not doing it. I don't care how much money you pay me. Because
I
can't see where it's 100% foolproof. I can't see it.
Right. And that was Right. And that's what I was getting ready to say. This is exactly why stunt doubles have their job. Because I'm sure, there's no way in the world, I believe, they don't have waivers there that say, okay, you know what, you get into an accident or something happens to you, you know, during this, on this set, during, you know, these particular scenes, you know, the company is exonerated from any responsibility. I've seen that on, like, regular stuff. Like, when you go to a doctor, you know, you tell me, okay, if I go to sleep, now I wake up, there's a certain amount of responsibility that the anesthesiologist doesn't have. You know, all kinds of things. I've seen this for minor things. So you're not going to tell me that there's not a waiver that they sign. Now, at the same time, like Brother Al said, this is why they have stunt doubles, because this is what they do. Their whole career is based on, you know, taking those chances and running up into the walls or crashing into the car or jumping off the cliff or falling off the cliff or, you know, running into this. Or that's their job. So now you have it where these actors are now taking on, you know, these roles, and they're insisting that they've been given an opportunity to do this. But I'm looking here and I'm seeing several crew members suffered injuries. So they're not signing waivers, you know what I'm saying, to that degree. You know, oh, well, if I happen to be standing on the set and, you know, a piece of, you know, a glass breaks off and hits me in my eye, you're not, you know, responsible. So there's a lot of, I can't even imagine what the insurance policy must look like for these sets, especially when you're doing all of this crazy stuff.
Yeah, I'm thinking like crew member. I'm not thinking about stunt. I'm thinking not stunt people, anybody who's driving the car. Come on, if you're going to be in a car, I'm going to crash it out any kind of way. I think that's going to be some bodily injury, some kind of way. That's to be expected. I'm thinking like a latter part of what you said. I think somebody, you standing off to the side and a piece of a fence start, you know, gets thrown in your way and hits you and you get cut, hurt. You know, I'm thinking you're innocently on the side. You ain't not personally involved in the whole
right.
accident itself, stuff like that, you know, because I'm like, that ain't part of my job. You know,
right.
the stunt double,
right.
now I can see that, you know, you're waiving. Listen, that's why you're getting paid all this extra money. I think I said it. That's what you get paid this money for, to do that. That's your job. In case, you know, there's been incidents where stunt doubles die. I think recently, not too long ago, I believe somebody died, but it was a very high-risk, you know, job, and they accepted it. You accepted the call, but, you know, it didn't work out for them.
Brother Angel, let me ask you a question. So if the crew member know that this car is about to blow up, and you hear the director say action, why is the crew member on set? Or even, listen, if I know there's going to be any kind of flame, I'm going behind a wall or something. I'm not going to be out there where I can get hit by anything, glass, dust, nothing. I'm a crew member. Why would I be on the set for that?
Because that's your job.
You know what?
That's your job, to be
to
on the set. That's your job.
To do what? Put the fire out?
We don't know. We don't know what these crew members, what their responsibility was, and we don't know how close they were supposed to be. We don't know where they were supposed to be standing. We've been on set. You don't have say over, you know, if you're a crew member, where you can stand, if that's your job. What's that? I don't understand that.
Well, I'm
going to hire you, and then when we say action, I can't find you. Oh, you fired.
After the scene is over, I'll come back.
well, you know what? Some of them might not had a choice, especially the cameraman. The cameraman got to be there. Unfortunately, the car door hit him in the back of the head, but he had to be on his phone.
That's what I'm saying. We're not talking about somebody you brought on the set Pastor KL. So your daughter's visiting that day, and, you know, when they said action, she was standing around looking from left to right because she didn't know that this was going to happen. We're talking about this is their job. So we don't know if you're the cameraman. We don't know if you're somebody who's holding the boom mic. We don't know if you're somebody who's carrying the cords. We don't know who these, you know, these crew members were and what their responsibilities were. So we can't say that, you know, when they say action, you're going to run 10 feet. You know, when if you have a boom mic, you need to be right there. So unfortunately,
right. Oh, yeah.
you know, these crew members, you know, are supposed to be there. And that would be like people, you hire people. You really want your employees to tell you, oh, I'm sorry, but when the people came in the store, you know, they came in with a stroller, so I had to leave the premises. No, that's their job. So we don't know what exactly. They didn't say the boom micers or anything like that. They didn't give us the exact description of who, you know, the crew members were. But, yes, if that was their job, you know, they were supposed to be there. No, they didn't anticipate, as Brother Al said, getting hit in the back of the head. But, you know, it happened. So, you know, they're liable. They're liable. Yes.
Pastor, can you imagine? Can you imagine Pastor Carol, he's cameraman B, and then the action go on. Where's camera B? What is
Kevin
doing?
Hey, oh, Pastor Kerry got a tripod.
And the camera moves on the tripod. It doesn't necessarily stay on one thing. Oh my goodness!
With a remote.
You keep doing the job you do. You keep doing the job you doing. Oh my goodness gracious! All right, let's talk about these Gen Z's parents who have taken parenting to an entirely different level. We have very often this year alone talked about, you know, the murdering of these children. And they are really, really suffering at the brutal hands of their parents, of their natural parents. And they are 22, 23, 26. You know, these people are not even at 30 years old. And even to this one story where the neighbor upstairs said he heard the little girl yelling, stop, 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 for quite some time. And, you know, several people called the cops. And by the time they got there, it was too late. They describe her this woman's eight-year-old son, having countless lacerations on his back, scalp, arms, and legs, a gash in his head, cut on his forehead. The other little girl that she has had all kinds of scars on her waist and, oh my gosh, on her inner thighs and buttocks. Rashes and things, so just tell she's not taking care. What seems to be the breakdown here of parenting for our Gen Z's, Pastor KL?
Well, the breakdown is the parents' parents. You know, I blame a lot on us, you know, because We're no longer teaching. We're no longer imparting, and some of these children who are having children, is just flying by the seat of their pants. You know, they're doing what they've seen being done to them. You know, people always say when we used to grow up, I'm not gonna be like my mother, but be like my father, and we find ourselves doing the same things our mother and fathers, or saying the same things our mother and fathers have said to us, to our children. You know, So they're not learners. They don't know anything. So when you play with a doll as you grow up and you play dress up, the doll don't talk back. The doll has no real wants. And when you get tired of playing with whatever toy you want to play with, you put it down and you move on to something else. Well, see, a child won't allow you to put me down and to tend to something else if there's something I need. You know, and all while we was playing dress-up, we didn't have the reality of it all. And we wanted something to love us, and we wanted something to love because our parents didn't do it. But because we had not been shown love, we didn't know how to love. So now we're just as frustrated as our parents was with us, and we're taking it to the next level because we don't know how to make it stop crying. We don't know how to make it stop being hungry. We don't know how to make it stop saying, but why? But why? Can I? We don't understand those syndromes. So now we get frustrated and we just lose it as a child.
All right. Brother Al, what do you think the breakdown is?
I think Gen Z is crazy. You know, from one of the things I've seen, they don't take it serious with having children. They get these children from, you know, basically what I've been seeing. They get these children and it's like a toy. Oh, I'm gonna get my baby. My baby gonna have these Jordan sneakers, and it's a show. So they're buying the kids all this stuff. They don't think nothing about raising the child to have morals and things like that. I was seeing there was a young lady that lived on my block, and she was young, and she had a baby boy. And I was outside, and she came over, and she had the baby, beautiful little baby. Now, it's 80 degrees outside. She got on a jean suit, a hat, and the baby just crying his eyes out. And she was like, he just won't stop crying. And what he had on was nice, but the brother, I said, you know why he won't stop crying? She said, why? I said, because he's hot. I said, look at him, he's sweating. He took the hat off his head, took the jacket off, and the baby stopped crying. So they use these babies like a pawn. You know, my baby got this. I see it on the posters, and I'm sitting there like, wow. Oh, my baby got the Gucci sneakers, and I paid $600 for his little jacket. Yeah, he going to outgrow it next week. Because he's constantly gone. So they busy looking at what they can get their kids and what they can provide for their kids instead of teaching these kids, you know, how to read, how to tell time. All that stuff is out the window now. And then when the kid starts crying or don't know how to do it, they have no idea on how to take care of this kid. Maybe the kid just needs you to rub his back. Maybe the kid is hungry. And then their way of doing it, let me shake this kid or let me throw him down or let me pop him here, stop crying. So they just all screwed up right now.
Okay. Brother Ainsley, what say you about our Gen Zs and, you know, they're not raising, but they're murdering their kids?
It's crazy. It's really crazy. Unfortunately, this is it's not completely new. You know, it's really kids having kids. But the brutality and the violence, though, is different because, I mean, we always had young girls, young women having kids at an early age, and this is not the case. So you just can't just say it's based on age. It's on the experiences. What makes them think that this behavior is okay? What lack of training make you that you don't, you're not sensitive to know that you can't beat a child? I mean, we all know having kids, you know, they can get on our nerves. So Lord knows they can get on our nerves and stuff like that. And you may want to shake the child, you know, but, you know, there's something got to click that says, no, I can't do this. You know, you can't beat, you can discipline a child, but, you know, to beat them senseless, there's something wrong mentally if you can't just discern, okay, you know, where to stop and stuff like that. So I think it's a behavior issue that's taught or not taught, and it's like is that to me some kind of intervention, because then if it, as Pastor KL said, you know, obviously they didn't get it from their own parents. We get a lot of our ideas on parenting from our own parents, what we say we want to do, what we're not going to do, and stuff like that. And largely we will keep what our parents taught us. We keep it to our kids. We might not do certain things, but we get a lot of our parenting skills from our own parents. So then where do we break that curse, or where do we break that pattern and that happening? How do we instill that this don't happen again in another family? And our family say, okay, this don't happen in my family, but how do we get this, break this process in another family? And I think it's going to be more of a, how we say, the our community, the village, so to speak, and say, no, this is not what, this is not acceptable. This is not accepted. This is not how we do. We raise our kids. We nurture our kids. We don't, yeah, we can discipline them. Yes, we know they can get on our nerves. Yes, there are a handful. And you got to know the responsibility. Like but Al said, things are like a novelty. It was like, you know, just want to prop the kids up. And even worse, like I've seen, you know, young ladies, they dress to the T, walking down with the stroller, and you look at the kid, and I'm like, I mean, you look like you got about a good $600 worth of clothes on, but this kid look like he ain't got nothing on, you know? So I think it's like how we break this pattern and generally in our community, but into other families and stuff like that. So the breakdown, it's mental, it's a behavior issue.
Yeah, this is different. You know, years ago, you know, people used to say, "Oh, my mother beat me with an extension cord," or "She threw a shoe at me," or, you know, if they rated beatings then the way they rate them now, you know, a lot of parents back then would have been in jail. You know, back then, you know,
yeah,
they may not have, you know, beat you, you know, quote unquote, the way they should have. However, it was never to kill you. It was never to hurt you. You know, it was always a discipline thing. Now, did the discipline, you know, go a little bit left sometimes? Absolutely. But this is a different mentality here. This mentality is, I want to hurt you. You look at the description that was just given for each of these children, one ending up in death. This is, the little girl is yelling, stop, stop, stop. This is not the first time she's done this, this mother, and her goal is to hurt. That was not predominantly what was done back then. It was to discipline you. Now, some may say, you know, well, they hurt you to discipline you. You know, so, you got a little semantics going on there. But this mentality is much different. And I always talk about the mentality between my millennials, my two millennials, and my Gen Z. Half the time they look at her like she's crazy. You know, it's amazing, because I thought it was me. I thought it was me not understanding who she was. I thought it was me, like, is this kid sick or what? Why is she talking like this? I thought it was just me as a parent. But her sisters would look at her like, what? You know, so there's a distinct separation between even the millennials and the Gen Zs. And for those of us who have raised both, you see that you can't even raise them the same. You've got to handle them differently. Why? Because even their mentality is just completely different. So, yeah, I do agree. Mm-hmm. You know, that with Pastor KL that says, you know, it's a parental thing. One of you also said, you know, how we take our lead from the parents. But I got to tell you, I think they said that this is the first generation where they had 100% technology. You know, our millennials remember what it was like to go outside and play. You know, they knew what it was up to what it was to ride a bike and be on skates and, you know, to get their knees and things bruised. This Generation Z. So I don't know what the anger is. They need therapy. I know that much. And unfortunately, they're having children before the therapy can take place. So I don't know what to do right now other than, like Brother Ainsley said, let's get this village mentality. You know, take the children for some time, you know, give them a little break. And I know it sounds crazy. Well, they had them. Why do they need the break? Well, here's why. They thought that parenting was going to be completely different, clearly, and it's not. So if you see, you know, then take 5 minutes because you're not doing it for the parent. You're ultimately doing it for the children. So I don't know what else, you know, to
Yes. To your thought, these children are having babies for therapy. I mean,
you're right.
Think about it. If they have nothing in their house, if they don't see the love, if they don't feel the love, you know, this baby is their therapy. This baby to them, in their mind, because this is before the baby is born, is their way of escape from
right.
this loneliness,
right.
from this hurtness. You know, this is their way of escape. Now, going to the other side of what you said, where you said, you know, our parents never beat us to hurt us. I was hurt quite a few times. I don't know what kind of beatings you got. You know, and I think I died a couple of times too because my dad.
You
know, I was one of those children. I was one of them children who got beat with extension cords. See, these children don't know how to get spanked. Don't know what it's like to get spanked on the booty. You know what I mean? But I'll tell you one thing: that back then, when we got beat, whether it was good or bad, you know, my father could have been in jail for life. To be honest with you. For child abuse, but we learned different things from that beating. I promise you, we did. You know, we didn't touch certain things. We didn't do certain things. Now we want to have the timeout situation and the conversation situation, and these little knuckleheads now, they don't listen to you. They think
right.
we didn't listen back in the days. They're definitely not listening.
Ooh,
to let's just reason together.
Yeah.
You know. That's not happening. With you know, again, my mother and father was never my friends. Never.
Right.
Now, we have an awesome relationship now, but I tell you all the story all the time how I hated my father. You know, but now I've learned how to appreciate him for everything that he did, good, bad, or ugly. You know, when you have nothing but bad, and that's all you know what I mean, you're going to grow up that way. Because there's nothing else to go to the other side. If God had not shown you the rain, you couldn't appreciate the sun.
You know, some of the stuff you say I agree with, and some of the stuff I don't quite agree with. You know, again, you know, I ask, why are you so angry? They can't even answer. They can't even answer. Why are you so angry? You cannot put everything on, and I'm not saying you necessarily are, but you can't put everything on what did not happen from home. And I agree with you 100%. You know, when you got beat, whether it was with an extension cord or just a belt on your behind, you learned. And some of us had a little trouble learning. Because we went and did it anyway. I just happened to be one where you won't get to tell me and beat me one time. I never did that thing again. And I'm sorry.
Not that
I was
one
not.
Time.
Yeah. I may have tried something else, which was not really a bit, you know, for me. But I was never one to just kind of explore rebellious. You know, I know adults our age, and they were like, man. I got tore up all the time because I was always, even when I got a beating, it didn't matter. But still, for some reason, they didn't go but so far. But this generation, whether good or bad, a lot of them are just angry. And it's like when you ask, like, what are you so mad about? They're like, I don't know. It's like, this is like so cockeyed. You know, what do you mean you don't know? You're the one who's exemplifying the anger. You're the one who's feeling this. You're the one who, you know, I just want to be left alone. Well, what is alone? Look at what Alone is doing. Lord have mercy. It's like, what is going on? So, you know, I really don't understand the breakdown. I've seen it. I'm seeing it with my own eyes, and I'm not getting it. And, you know, can we put some of this on parenting? Absolutely, because this is also some generations where you partying with your kids. Back in the day, yo, you could not be found. You better not walk up in the room if there were a bunch of adults up in the room. Now,
right.
Y'all clubbing together. Y'all drinking together. Right.
That's unheard
of. Smoking weed together. You know, this is, the, like you said, Pastor Kale, this is like equal status here. So, you know, we do see a huge breakdown of even the boundaries. But this one here is a tough one. And unfortunately, their children are suffering. Our grandchildren are suffering.
Yeah, I know a situation, all right, but I think it really comes down to the discipline, really, because one instance, all right, I'm not going to name names. So I know a young man now, I think he's in jail now, though, but when he was younger.
Also, it's not Pastor K.L.
He's his parents.
Ain't nobody on the platform.
All right, so. But the thing is, so his parents, one of those, oh, we want to talk it out with the timeout and all this kind of stuff. They don't want to hit the, you know, the physical discipline. They don't want to do the belt thing or this yada, yada, yada. All right, so one time, so he went to stay with his aunt, right? Aunt had a totally different situation. You know, if the child gets this too out of hand, she beat the child, right? So, this young boy, he gets, you know, he think he can just say what he do, what he want to do, and that's it. The aunt, you know, reprimanded him and said, listen, don't do that. Child did it again. Don't do that. Child got whooped. Beat the child, right? Get child discipline and whatnot, right? Years later, now when he's in jail, he wrote a letter. He was like, you know what? He said, I appreciate the beating, but that's what I realized you loved me. Told to the aunt, he said, because I didn't get that at home. That showed that you cared about after the fact and whatnot. He said, I wish now I would have more discipline at home because then I probably would not be where I'm at right now. And this is what he wrote. He wrote, he's in jail now, though. But this is what he wrote to his aunt. He said, thank you, because even with that, He might have been in jail sooner than he went in. So, you know, so it makes a big difference. That discipline, it goes a long way. You know,
absolutely.
I'm talking to a certain extent, but there's a consequence for this. You know what I'm saying? There's a consequence for that. And to me, it ain't working.
Yeah.
But you know what my next question would be, Brother Ainsley? So just think about what we went through. And then how we reacted to our children. Now this young lady, it's killing this child. Now suppose she didn't kill that child. What would that child be as a parent? Because it's getting worse every time you go.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So and you know what's happening too is that there's no discipline at home and there's no discipline in the schools. So these kids just feel I can do whatever I want to do. I tell the kids in my school all the time. I sat there and I pulled one of the kids out of class. And I said, why did you say that to the teacher? And his response was, oh, yo, she got me tight. She made me mad. I said, do you realize if you go out in the street and you say what you said to that woman, to somebody in the street, you probably get your head knocked off. And that's what it is. They feel I can just... I'm not getting in trouble at home because my parents are scared I'm a call. I can't do it in school because that person will lose their job. I can do whatever I want to do. I can say whatever I want to say. And the discipline is just out the window.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, you've heard a lot of kids say, you know, or adults, you know, I knew I was loved when, you know, my parents – discipline me. You know, I knew that, I rather the discipline than the talking. Now, it's, I have some mixed emotions about that one because, the parent who tried to talk. Now, I wasn't a talking parent. I said it once, that was it. Maybe you got it twice, and the next time we going for broke here, because clearly my talking ain't doing nothing. However, can you blame a parent who may have come from a Pastor KL's experience where he was beat so, to the degree of he should have been locked up type of thing, and now they're trying another way? For me, it didn't matter. However I was disciplined, I was just going to carry the thing on. But for some parents, that's where that, I'm not going to do what was done to me mentality comes in. So now you've got the parent who, tried it that way, and now the kid comes back and says, well, that ain't work. What do you do with that? Brother Al, what do you do with that? Where now you have a kid that comes back and says, well, you tried to talk to me, but I'd rather you had beat me. What do you do with that?
Well, I think there's a line that you draw. You can't beat a person for everything. Like I said, when we was growing up, our parents just was different. And I think you have to try to learn from that. Okay, you know what? I'm going to beat that behind, but I'm not going to beat you for everything. I'm going to mix it up. So I'm going to beat that behind. I'm going to take this away from you. You ain't going to be able to go here. I ain't buying you stuff. I think you need to mix that up, because I have ran into incidents where, I spoke with parents, and I speak with people all the time, and one of the parents was like, my mother beat me half to death, so I don't even beat my kids at all, because, it was traumatizing for them. But I think that there has to be a mixture of it, and like you said, like this kid, he got time to think now. He's in prison. He got time to think, and it's like, wow, maybe if I would have got beat more, I wouldn't be in this predicament. So I think you have to mix it up, though.
Okay. But what do you do with that as a parent? This is hindsight now. This hindsight is 2020. What do you do with that when you have a child writing a letter or a young person writing a letter going, you should have whipped my behind? What do you do with that as a parent? What do you think?
Wow, you just... That's a rough one there, but it's like, wow, you get that letter, and it's like, wow, he's saying I should have beat him more. I think as a parent, you sit there, and I think you would get mixed emotions from that. Like, wow, man, I didn't do enough. It's my fault he in prison. I could have did more. So I think you as a parent, you would deal with some mixed emotions with that.
All righty. Pastor KL, what do you say of a person such as yourself who had the experience with your parent, and you said, now I realize, what the butt whoopings was about, but you have, you raised kids, and because you decided not to discipline them physically, now they're in trouble, and they come back and they say, because this is very common, I'm telling you, that, and this is not just now. This has been some millennials have said, I'd rather the parent who would discipline me, but it's after the fact. It's always after the fact, that disciplined me, or the adult who reprimanded me, and now, hey, I'm in trouble. I wish you had beat me. What do you say? You didn't beat your son, but now you was like, yeah, because my father just tore me up. What do you hear when you hear that? Are you talking to the mute button, Pastor KL?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, it's almost like, we used to say, you're damned if you beat, damned if you don't. Mm-hmm. You tried to break what I was thinking. Was a generational curse. I'm thinking my father, my grandfather killed my father,
try to kill me. You try to break that with your children, you know, so you try to go another way, you know, so it, as I think someone said, you know, now you become guilty or you feel guilty. Well, it worked with me. Why did I just not try to kill my son, you know, being wise, you know? And then it's funny how later on down the line, even now, you know, with me, you equate the beatings with the concerns. Your real parents beat you because they were concerned the avenue you were going down, and they were trying to stop you before it got too far. You know, it's not like these children now who just beat you because you won't stop crying, beating you because,
right.
you know, they
right.
were beating you with a purpose, if you will.
Right.
That might sound a little cliche or funny, but they were beating you with a purpose. They were beating you because at some point they were where you are, and they did
right.
not want
right.
you to go any further than that. So they
right.
had to scare you enough, you know, so that you can stop whatever you were doing. You know, so it wasn't the small brat, you know, let me beat you because you just want to be small. Let me beat you because, no, there was an avenue you were going down, and because I saw it in you. So watch this. So the parent has to recognize the change of behavior. That's what
mm-hmm.
the parent does.
Mm-hmm.
And because I recognize the change of behavior, I said, no, this is not where you want to be. And since you don't understand this is not where you want to be because you can't see the hole in front of you, I have to stand between you and the hole and make sure you don't get there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Brother Ainsley, there was a young man who, it was one of Shantice's friends, and I've told this story on here before. And he was cutting up at one point, and he ended up going to jail. And when he came back around, I didn't know, you know, some of the things, but then I did find out that he had gone to jail. And when he came around, I was like, yo, what happened? So he said, you know, whatever happened. And it was just stupid stuff, just stupid, hanging with the wrong crowd, blah, blah, blah. So I punched him in the chest. And I was like, yo, that was dumb. That was dumb. Later on, when he came to church, he was talking, and he said, when he went to jail, his mother offered to buy him a car. Stay out of jail. I'll buy you. Stay out of trouble. I'll buy you a car. She was offering to buy him a car. He said, but you, Miss Stephanie, punched me in the chest. That I took. I didn't take the car offer. And I couldn't understand, you know, back then. But as an adult now, I realized that that's what I needed. I didn't need the car. I needed the punch in the chest. That's what we're talking about now. You know, where you're trying
mm-hmm.
as a parent to, you know, coming from a parent who beat you or coming from, you know, I tried everything. Now let me try to buy you, you know. How do you come back from that as a parent who tried your best to, you know, work with your child who was getting in trouble but not beat them or discipline them physically, and now you're hearing you should have whipped my behind type of thing? What do you do with that?
It's really too late at that point. It's really too late.
Right.
But I think, you know what it is, in trying to do something better, it actually turned to more of a selfish thing because, as Pastor KL said, I agree with him, because, you know, you say, I'm not going to do this because I don't like how I think that my parents went overboard with the discipline, the beating. All of that is not necessary. That's how you think. So I'm not going to do this to my own kid and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but because that's how you feel. But now, as now, you're watching your child. You need to be watching and say, you don't see the behavior differences, how out of control your child is getting,
mm-hmm.
that maybe
mm-hmm.
your way of doing
mm-hmm.
things is not working. But, you know,
mm-hmm.
you won't be so selfish and your thought pattern, you don't, it's not clicking, okay, wait a minute, maybe I have to discipline this child. Okay, maybe I may not have to go to the extent that my parents did, you know
mm-hmm.
practically
mm-hmm.
put me halfway in the hospital. But,
right.
you know, it ain't off the table.
Right.
It's not
right.
off the table. I mean, I got to maybe do this a little bit. Modify. Don't go, oh, I'm not going to do this at all. But because,
right.
you know, you go hard and now you're wrong, and this is where we at.
Right.
So, you know,
right.
you need to look at, focus on the child and the behavior. okay, if that talking was working, okay. But obviously it's not. And you can't wait till the child is 17, 18, 19, 20-year-old.
Right.
Now you want to change something.
Right.
You saw that stuff at 2 years old. Three,
right.
four, five,
right.
two to seven.
Right.
That's, those are the most formative years.
Right.
By then, that mentality is set. I can get away with it. You can tell me no. I know I can still do what I want to do. You may never. We can talk about my repercussions for not listening to you. No. Back in the day, my mom and papa said no. That was it. If I dare to try to do something else, I know I'm going to catch hell. You know. So I knew it was a given. You just knew it. Everybody knew it.
Absolutely.
So, and I need to focus on the child. You know, okay, yeah, you can modify what, you know, you may not discipline as much as your own parents did, but, you know, you got to see, recognize your child's behavior when they're going off the rails and whatnot at the early age. Otherwise, this is where we at. This is where we at.
Absolutely.
You can't do nothing when they're 19, 20 years old now. You know, no.
Right.
It's too late.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, my tagline is big messes were once little messes. You ain't wake up 30 committing crime and doing stuff. You know, you ain't wake up 25, you know, pushing around people. You were pushing around your brothers and sisters, and everybody was like, cut it out. Y'all stop that fighting. And here, this is being bred right underneath your nose, and now here you got some, you know, murderer or some crazy person. I want to close with this, guys. You know, that same mentality keeps children out of church. Because I was forced to go to church. They made me go to church. I had to go to church Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, two times on Sunday, three times on Saturday. We stayed in there from sunset to sunset. Now they don't give their child God. What are we facing now? Because you thought, because like Brother Ainsley said, this happened to you. You were forced to do this. Now you're not going to force your child to go to church. What are we facing now, Brother Ainsley? You know what?
Okay,
wait, before you start. Talk directly to those who are listening and tell them what we're facing now, because they were forced to go to church. They are not forcing their children to go to church, or they're not taking their children to church, and now what we're facing. Don't talk to us. Talk to them.
All right. So, okay, for those of us who had to go to church all the time, it's been almost the majority of our childhood. If we weren't in school, we was in church. And, okay, we didn't appreciate it then. But it has to be some appreciation now. You mainly couldn't understand everything that was going on. But now, as an adult, we got to appreciate what it did for us. What did it keep us from? What did we learn from it? It gave us discipline. Discipline, and you know, what's a place to be in church? You know, as a child, that's our training ground, our learning, our discipline, and learning our faith in God. That's what the seeds is planted for us, you know. And with this, you know, they say the village help raise the child, and the church. It helps raise our children. It gives us a sense of a purpose and know what we are here for. And even though we may not understand it as we grow up, we grow into it. So without this, the discipline, without the knowing of God, it become more of a lawless, a more sinful society. That is what's happening. And it's a very easy thing to change from. For those of us who think, okay, I'm not doing that, well then start. Churches are still open. You can always still bring your child. Make sure the child go to church. It's meaningful, and it's It's a shame. Now, if you think things are better now than they were before then, is that, was that what we're saying? We think things are really better now? All right, well, then, okay, this is one main reason why. This is one main reason why.
Okay. Thank you, Brother Ainsley. Brother Al, what are you saying to the people who are listening or who will hear? You know, that I know you were made to go to church all the time, and you are sick of church, and you're not going to pass that on to your children. But?
I would say, okay, yeah, we were forced to go to church. You didn't want to be there. Speaking for myself, because I didn't understand what was going on. I didn't know why we going to church, you know, and I didn't understand. But as I got older and appreciated that, wow, this is why I was going to church. I know better. I know God now, and I understand. And like you said, there's some people have in the back of their mind, well, you know what? I understand everything now, but I'm not going to force my child to go. And I would say, give your child what your parents didn't give you. And sit down and talk to them about church. Hey, you know what? We go to church. Why do you think we go to church? What do you think is our reason why we go to church? And have a conversation with your child and have them understand. Because even to this day, with me being in the church, I see that there are children that are there, don't know what's going on. And it's just, okay, you're gone and that's it, but you don't talk to the child. See how they feel as far as, do you know why we're going to church? Do you know who God is? And have that conversation, and I think it would be so much better just instead of just saying you're going to church, or you saying, you know what, look how long it took you to come back to church because you were supposed to go to church, and the same thing happened. Nobody explained anything to you or told you anything about God or know nothing, and you didn't learn till you got older. Now, we in our last and evil days, and if your child is not going to church, you might as well just hand them over to the enemy. Because that's where he's going. If he don't know, he or she don't know God or anything about God, they're going over to the enemy. And that's, again, your fault. So you're going to be held accountable. So I would say have a conversation with your child about church. Sit down and talk to them. Hear them out. Tell them your part. And go from there. And I think that will work out so much better.
Amen. Amen. Thank you, Brother Al. Pastor KL, what are you telling those who hear this broadcast?
Well, I'm going to twist it a little bit from Brother Al. So Brother Al said, let's give you or give your children what your parents did not give you. So let's take it from this aspect. If you were forced to go to church, then how about we give our children what our parents did give us? Our parents took us to our house, where we could be introduced to God, where we could be introduced to the one who covers us. You know, how about we give our children back a covering? How about we go back to church, therefore we can take our children with us to church? You know, a lot of times, you know, in the old days, our parents didn't want to go to church, but they knew who God was. They knew who God was so much that they made you go so that you can know who God is. Listen. You can't do nothing without God. And how dare you think that you're living on this earth, blessed the way you are, without having a covering. Now, it would behoove me to think at this point that if I can do all this stuff and don't reverence God, and he still yet takes care of me, what will he be able to do, or how much better I will be if I have God in my life? But the reason why things are going the way they're going is because we have taken God out of school. We don't pray when we leave. My grandmother, every morning when I went to school, she used to kiss me on the forehead and then rub my hands. I didn't know until I was a teenager that she had oil in her hands. And she was praying for me as she kissed me and as she sent me off to school. We got to get back to those days. We got to get back to the days where we're just laying all on the pillow of their bed. They don't know what's going on, but someone's praying for them. And we must introduce them to God, because without God, we will be nothing. The Bible says that we can do all things through Christ that strengthens us. But if you don't know Christ, how can you be strengthened?
Amen, amen, and amen. Thank you very much, Pastor KL. Thank you, Brother Ainsley and Brother Al, for a thought-provoking conversation. And we pray that you have a blessed weekend.
Y'all too. Have a good weekend. Take care.
Thank you. All righty. Well, an inspiring conversation. Let's get this benediction. Therefore, my beloved brothers, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that in the Lord, your labor is not in vain. 1 Corinthians 15:58. Wow. We have the challenge today. Challenge has been put out there today. Challenge has been put out there to give your children what was given to you. We can't afford not to. We see what this has resulted in. We see how this has turned where not giving our children has been very costly. Not giving our children God has been very, very costly. I think, you know, when we talk about the then and now, the difference between then and now, the difference between then and now is when we were being reprimanded, we were also being given God. We were being given Jesus when we were being reprimanded. So it wasn't a one-note Charlie thing being given across the board. Now we give our children no Jesus and no discipline. Now we give our children no Jesus and we give them no logic, no love, no understanding, no real care. You know, love is twisted in this world. You know, we believe that we love when we do this. We believe we love when we don't do that. And, you know, I really go with what was said by Brother Ainsley. You know, okay, so you did try this. And when you see that this did not work, then what did you do? What do you do? Do you keep going on the same path that you have been on? So I put this in the same context with us offering our children God. It never made sense to me that a person who was made to go to church is now so rebellious that they saw nothing that came from it. Makes no sense to me. How, you know, you don't think you didn't benefit from any of that? That you would not even offer that option to your children. Give it to them. Give it to them. If you don't want to go, then you don't go. But you have to, God has surrounded you with someone who you can entrust your children with to take them. So you don't go. But give them to someone who would see to it that they do have that introduction to Jesus. And when you have seen that this is not working, you not giving yourself to God, then what other option do you have but to now give your give Jesus a chance at this? And I do not go with the old song that says, when you've tried everything and everything has failed, try Jesus. Nah, it's too late at that point. You know, we have let too much go by. So try Jesus right now. You've been listening to It's Due Time with Pastor Steph. Join us Monday through Friday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. where we discuss matters of the heart, mind, and spirit. As you go through your day, be sure to set your mind on things that are above, not on things that are on the earth. They will only serve as a distraction. Remember, prayer changes things. It's Pastor Steph signing off, and I want to thank my Due Time crew, my men, for sending us into a thought-provoking weekend. Thank you for hanging out with us. Please do not miss this opportunity to give Christ your life right now. Please do not miss this opportunity to strengthen that relationship with the Lord right now, because later is not promised to any of us until Monday morning. Oh, no, wait, we got Sunday, the Word Prayer Project. Come on in the room. See what we're praying about. Until then, God spares. I love you.